do you tell the difference between aiming for excellence and striving for perfection? It's tricky, isn't it?
One of our listeners put it this way. She said, "My biggest struggle is knowing when enough is enough. Where is the balance of putting enough work or effort into something without crossing the line into perfectionism?"
Such a great question. I've spent so many years trying to figure this out, and I know so many women are asking the exact same question.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Today's guest is Glynis Whitwer, author of Taming the To-Do List, How to Choose Your Best Work Every Day.
Glynis Whitwer is on staff with Proverbs 31 Ministries as the Executive Director of Communications.
If you've been trying to find that line between aiming for excellence and striving for perfection, your search is over. Today, Glynis has a fabulous answer just for you.
It is so good. We made her say it twice. Listen for it.
What's the relationship between perfectionism and procrastination? I find a lot of women don't even think they're related.
Can I start with a definition of procrastination?
You can do whatever you want, Glynis.
Because sometimes procrastination is confusing to people, and you think you're procrastinating when you really are just a good planner. You know, if you schedule things to be done on Saturday because you have more time or you have more energy, that's not really procrastinating. Procrastinating is postponing what's in your best interest to do now.
Ooh.
That's really where a lot of us have an issue. You know, we put off what we really should be doing. So perfectionism, how do those two things relate? Well, not every procrastination is because of perfectionism, but I think for a lot of us it is. And I think when we struggle with perfectionism, we have an external or an internal vision of how things should be done,
mm-hmm.
how they should be done right. And sometimes it comes from other people, but most of the time it comes from within. And it's based on other people, but we have this idea of how things should be done right. And if we can't do them right, then it's good to put them off until whatever, until we can do them right. Or sometimes we never get to them because we figure we'll never do them right. So that's really it. Perfectionism is that little voice inside our heads that says, why bother? Because you won't do it right.
Now, I love in your book how you talk about that there are 12 years of our life that reinforces that whole idea. What's that?
Amy, and I bet you and I'd be like, maybe Sherry too. I bet you loved school just as much as I did. Didn't you?
Yes.
I'm still in school because I know how to do school right. It's the one thing in my life I can do well.
I know. And then if you have the slightest little instinct towards perfectionism, school is your happy place because
Yes. You
know what's expected of you. Like, you know what to do to get an A. And I can remember even that first test just thinking, okay, if I can make it to the first test, I'll know exactly what the teacher wants. And then from that point on, I will know how to study for my tests. I'll know how to write my reports. I'll know how to do this because I will figure out what that teacher wants and I will do it. And I knew how to get an A. Now, that didn't mean I always could get an A. I would have failed chemistry. Let me just put it that way. Even a girl who loves school hits a brick wall every once in a while. Like, I realized that I'm too concrete. If I can't see it, if I can't touch it, it doesn't exist. And so, anyway. Thank goodness my lab partner was a chemistry professor's daughter. That's how I passed chemistry. My F's in the test and her A's in the lab. I got a low C and I passed. So anyway, that's it. But 12 years reinforcing. Here's what you need to do to get a good grade. And then you get out and there's no teacher. There's nobody telling you how you get an A. And if you're a perfectionist, that can drive you nuts because then that's when you start setting, here's what I have to do to get an A. And a B is not acceptable. It's not. For an A student, it's not. So,
you know, I had never thought of it in terms of, I mean, what you're describing is an external locus of control, needing that outside authority to tell me what's the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah. And I'm telling you, it is huge in this generation coming up. What we call millennials, if anybody works out in the professional world with millennials, being told what to do is huge. It's hard for them, even worse than us, to be self-starters, to know, is it okay? When is it okay to do something? So we're all on this journey of realizing that there's no teacher anymore once you get out of school. You know, and I work with writers all the time. And I think it's really hard for a writer because you had your English teacher and that red pen or however you got your grades back, that teacher is there. She's sitting there outside your head all the time, and you're so afraid of her. So you just are afraid to start, or you're afraid to finish, and it can drive you nuts.
That's true. And for me, that's the thing that I started realizing had killed my soul. Like, for a while, that perfectionism got me gold stars. And yeah. Then it starts to kill your soul because you just walk around trying to read the room all the time, just like you read your teacher for so long.
Yeah. Or your boss or your mother or somebody whose respect you really wanted. And it's a process of peeling off those layers of expectation to discover our authentic self. That's a years long process. I'm telling you what, it is not an easy thing to do.
Okay, unpack that phrase, discovering your authentic self.
Well, that your opinions have value, that your talents have value. They don't have value based in comparison to somebody else, but they have value because they're yours. That's a really hard thing for people to accept, that their imperfections have value because God created us that way. And I say imperfections, I should put those air quotes around it, because of course we're all imperfect, but we define imperfection based on somebody mm-hmm. else's perfection. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's a constant comparison battle to not compare ourselves to somebody and to be okay with who God made us to be. That's how I got Taming the To-Do List done. That's how I got it written, because I could hardly start. I was like, every time I started researching perfectionism, it was written by somebody with a PhD or an MD or a combination or even initials that I had no clue what they stood for. They were like, I have no initials, you know, how can I write on this topic? And it really was me realizing that I can write on it because God called me to do it. And he cares about my opinion and he cares about what I think. And we all need to understand that God cares about what we think, and it's okay. How we think is okay.
It made me tear up to even hear you say that, because I've thought so differently for so long. One of the things that was transformative for me, you have these two major shifts, I think, in thinking in this chapter 9 that we're talking about. And one of them, this is something I've been wrestling with for a while, because since we've all three written on perfection, I know we've all three gotten this question. So is it bad to want to do things well or with excellence? And you said excellence is possible in some things. Mm. Perfection is possible in nothing. And I thought, oh, that's such a great definition. And that definition makes me exhale. It makes me feel less overwhelmed.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, that was an aha for me writing the book. You know, I realized that excellence pushes us to do our best and perfectionist pushes us to be the best.
Oh, and that, okay. You know, whoa.
Say that again.
Say that again.
It's okay to desire excellence. Excellence pushes us to do our best. Perfectionist pushes us to be the best.
Wow.
And that is where we get tripped up, don't you think? I mean, we have to be the best, you know, this airbrushed social media version of ourselves. And it keeps some of us from doing anything. It keeps me from being on social media. I mean, I'm telling you, it's like, I always think, why does anybody want to hear what I think, you know? And then, oh, I can't do graphics well. I mean, I don't know. I can come on a whole personal revelation about this, about how I have to still the chains of expectation bind me, you know? Like, I want to shake them off. I want them off, but only God can take them off. Mm-hmm. And that's when we realize that he's the best. He's the best, and we just have to be us. If we're not us, then there's something missing in his grand scheme. If we're not us, we have to be us.
In Taming the To-Do List, you talk about having a fixed mindset versus having a growth mindset. Tell us a little bit about that and how that applies to all of the things we're talking about here.
A person with a fixed mindset believes that their combination of gifts and talents is set. And so when you feel like it's set, you're constantly feeling like you have to maximize that. You have to make the most of it, and you have to prove. That's probably the biggest thing. You have to prove to others that you have what it takes. And whoa, if anybody even doubts that you have what it takes, because then that kicks you into high gear. Spoken from the person who is constantly feeling like they have to prove that they have what it takes. But a growth mindset, what a freedom, because you realize that you are changing. You're growing. You're learning new things. You're improving. What we have is in seed form. And so everything that we have is given to us in seed form. Every natural gift, every spiritual gift is given to us in seed form. And we have the ability to grow it and develop it and change it and improve it. And so I think that's just it. If you think that what you've got is fixed and there's no more and you can't get any more and you certainly don't want to lose it, it puts you in a very rigid mindset. A growth mindset is that idea that it's okay growing. Like, you just think of a child, you know, just think a child is learning to walk. They never fall and go, doggone it, I'm not going to try that again. You know, they don't. They just say, okay, I'm going to get myself back up and I'm going to try to walk. And today I'm going to stand up by the table and tomorrow I'm going to take the step towards the couch. You know, what if we had that attitude about everything in our life? Like, okay, I'm learning this. I'm doing this for the first time. I've never been on this day before. Today's a new day for me. Like, wouldn't that be freedom if we could just say, okay, this is my first time doing this. And so I'm going to give myself grace and I'm going to learn and I'm going to expect that I'm going to fall and I'm going to get back up again. I think that's the difference. And I do think we can change our mindset. You know, I think acknowledging that we have a fixed mindset is the start of anything. Acknowledging where you are is the start of anything. And then asking, I mean, thankfully we have the Lord who has supernatural power, who comes and lives inside us and gives us the Holy Spirit. And that enables us to make changes that we couldn't do on our own. So I think acknowledging, you know, oh, I do have a fixed mindset. Oh, I am scared to death of failure. Oh, I'm afraid of what people will think of me. Acknowledge that and then go, yeah, I don't have to be like that. There's your first step towards a growth mindset. I'm going to change my mindset. So hopefully that will be an aha for some people.
That's terrific. I absolutely can't wait for this to be edited and out because my oldest son is a music performance major. He is wrestling his fixed mindset, trying to wrestle it down to the ground because it has absolutely become debilitating for him in that he's wrestling with performance anxiety. And it's a picture of what we all are doing. Unfortunately, he has to do it on a stage standing in front of people. So, but yeah, that is so helpful, especially the picture of the child walking. Love that.
It's so funny that you went straight to your son because my first thought was a conversation I had with my daughter last night, and she's almost 26. She was telling me, Mom, I should have these things figured out by now. I should know how to do this. And I kept asking, but have you ever done them before? No. Has anybody taught you how to do them? No. Have these situations ever existed in human history? No. And yet she feels all this pressure, and she even says she doesn't feel it from other people. It's internal that somehow she should automatically be able to do it. I can be so compassionate towards her. I can talk her through, and yet then I get off the phone with her, and what do I do with myself? I do the exact same thing. I'm like, what's wrong with you? How come you don't have this figured out already? So it sounds like a growth mindset involves a fair amount of compassion for oneself.
I think so. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's letting your failures be seen by others and realizing that you can survive it. I've often, like, let's say in a church setting or a small group setting, I gravitate towards the people with the most messed up lives. I love them. I love being around people who have got this messy, messy past, and it's obvious, and they're not ashamed of it, because there's something about that that makes me, like you said, Amy, earlier, you exhale, like, okay, all right. So it's going to be okay if other people see that I have a messy past or my life is messy right now. That's a daily thing for me to tell myself that, because I think in the world, we are drawn more and more to people who are authentically open about their mistakes. And if we want to have relationships with our children, we have to let them see our mistakes. If we want to have relationships with our family, we have to let them see our mistakes. I mean, because people don't want to be around people who are perfectionists. They just don't. Because you will say, I don't tell you you have to be like that, but they will feel, I have to be like that. I have to live up to this standard. And we don't do it on purpose. I know. But I mean, all you have to do is have one person tell you, which my son, you know, our kids are our best mirror sometimes. And if we can give them the freedom to speak truth to us, that it can change us. But I'll tell you, one time my middle son had gone away to college, first one actually to go away, and he just went across town. I bawled like a baby. He's 20 minutes away. I could barely get over it for like a week. And then he'd come home and I realized he's exhausted. Like, why is he so exhausted? Is he studying? Oh, no. My son was not studying. My son was having the time of his life the first time of being away from home. Well, it kind of bothered me because I thought he should be studying more. He shouldn't be figuring out how to go out and have fun as a college freshman. And then he would come to home and sleep. So he'd be asleep on the couch and I would think, this is our time together. Why is he sleeping on the couch? And I just got myself all worked up. I guess it just kind of eked out that I thought he ought to be doing things differently. And he once said, Mom, when you act like this, I don't even want to come home.
Ooh.
So ouch. I was like, well, that hurt. But from that moment on, I realized that even in just my natural, I think this is the way you ought to do it. This is the way people ought to do it. It comes off. It's like an aura, an aroma that we give off to other people. And so the more we can go, okay, I'm messed up here. I, you know, we're talking to women who are overwhelmed, and some of people are dying to not let other people know how overwhelmed they are. Okay. They are just like, in this Pinterest world, I cannot let people see that my house is a mess. I have friends who have in the past that still kind of won't let me come over because their house is a mess. I'm like, I don't care. You know what? Let me come over. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for someone who goes, okay, I'm a mess. I'm going to open my heart up and my life up and welcome you in. And that's who we're drawn to. So if we want to be people other people are drawn to, we have to let go of this. See, my son saying that to me changed me more than anybody telling me anything. I realized I'm going to push my son away the more I try to keep things under control and make this life perfect. I don't want to drive people away at all.
Well, and I loved, this was a big light bulb moment for me as I read through the chapter again, was that you said that not only do we have expectations of ourselves as perfectionists, but we have expectations of others, which you were talking about with your son. But to switch over to talking about Jesus, that he was an unexpected savior. He really was. And if his disciples had not embraced, and I love the way you wrote it, it's beautiful. Let's see. They would have missed out on the wildness and beauty of God's grace, mercy, and forgiveness. It makes me choke up to say it because I tend to be the girl who would like God to just please stay in the box. Like, just please stay there where I have you figured out. And Jesus was not what they expected at all.
No, not at all. And you know, one of the things I love about the Bible is how many failures they put in it. Like, really, if you were Peter, wouldn't you have fought not to have them put in that you betrayed Jesus 3 times? Wouldn't you have fought not to have that in the scriptures? And yet there it was for everybody to see. And don't you just think that's such a model for us? Like, let's just be messy together. And I don't mean physically messy. I don't mean cluttered messy. I'm saying let's just accept the messiness of this world, because that's when we get to experience the greatest forgiveness, the greatest love, the greatest connection. Yeah, it's okay to be overwhelmed at times. Of course, we don't want to stay there, but it's okay to be in that messy, messy place.
We're giving away a copy of Glynis's book, Taming the To-Do List, How to Choose Your Best Work Every Day. So just head to gritandgracegirls.com/episode31 to enter.
While you're there, you'll find a fabulous free download from Glynis that I think is the cure for perfectionism when it comes to meal planning. It's a 17-page list of mix-and-match lunch ideas. You know how much the kitchen scares me, right, Amy? Yeah. Well, this has actually got me excited to get in there and fix food for my menfolk. And you'll also find this week's Digging Deeper, created by our amazing intern, Kimberly, and the transcript of today's podcast.
We hope you've enjoyed episode 31 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Join us next week when Sherry and I will be processing with you what we learned from Glynis.
For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it. This is where we improv. I just re-listened to it last night and I'm drawing a blank. But that's okay.